And greetings once again. Welcome. Bienvenidos. Hola. Aloha. Wenihao. Namaste. Konnichiwa. Guten Tag. Bonjour. Half a day. Salam. Shalom. Peace. Now, go vegan. Peace. Now, go vegan. Well, from the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison military industrial corporation in the bribocratic corruptocracy of the United States of Listeria, this is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, the planet's first vegan radio program. And holy cow, with rumors abounding that Go Vegan with Bob Linden will be aired on a second Air America affiliate, KLSD in San Diego, and starting in just two or three weeks. Well, in addition to airing on the Air America affiliate, 960 The Quake in San Francisco, in the San Francisco Bay Area. Of course, with rumors abounding that this show is expanding, of course, talk would emerge about Air America going bankrupt, huh? Well, I apologize for causing this bankruptcy if I am at all responsible by bringing a vegan radio show to Air America stations, thereby offending all advertisers on those stations. After all, the media are funded by meat and dairy and the pharmaceuticals you need after using the products that were previously advertised, the meat and dairy. So, yes, I apologize if I've offended every progressive meat and dairy and pharmaceutical advertiser on this show. On this show, only vegan and cruelty-free products and services may be advertised. Hint, hint, Air America, progressive talk. Wake up. Maybe that's the wave of the future, huh? And people don't realize that this show is the barometer. Yes, your vegan radio show is your first responder, your best protection, your real first responder to the terrorism that is meat. And once again, I say forget Bin Laden, as apparently Bush has. That's all bad intelligence anyway. Plus, Bin Laden really is now more concerned with Whitney Houston now that she has her D-I-V-O-R-C-E going with Bobby Brown. So Bin Laden is probably preoccupied. All of that stuff dealing with him, bad intelligence. Good intelligence. Now, you remember how I said they often misinterpreted the chants on Bin Laden's videos, Bin Laden Gone Wild, where they misinterpreted saying the chants were saying death to Americans, death to Americans, when the real translation was keep eating what you're eating, keep eating what you're eating. And also now, apparently, Bin Laden was never really a concern as new good intelligence emerges. It's forget Bin Laden, worry about your bun laden. Your bun laden. What is your bun laden with? Well, that'll kill you before Al-Qaeda ever will. So don't depend upon your government to protect you. As long as it allows the sale of meat to civilians, to its own people, and allows them to eat it, well, then you know your government is not out to protect you at all. And really, who will protect us from our own Department of Deutschland Security? I mean, Homeland Security. Apparently, it seems Northern California is a threat to Homeland Security and apparently is expendable. Now, I don't just say that because...
I know, and you're going to be the hottest controversial vegan talk show host on the face of the planet.
No, I say it because Northern California looks to be on the fast track for major bioterrorism, or at least experiments thereof. And we have Ed Hammond on the line, and wanted to talk to him. This issue just came to my attention, and I thought it was important that we get it on the air right away. Also, this program, Go Vegan with Bob Linden, coming up, we will be talking to Theodora Capaldo, the president of the New England Anti-Vivisection Society, the executive director and president, and also John Robbins coming up. But I wanted to to get to this issue as quickly as possible, because your vegan radio show, no, it's not just about eating your fruits, vegetables, nuts, grains, seeds, and legumes. It's about, well, saving the planet. And now we apparently have to save Northern California. Ed Hammond is the executive director of the Sunshine Project, director of the U.S. Office of the Sunshine Project. And since 1993, he has worked on biotechnology-related policy. He's a member of the Pugwash Study Group on Chemical and Biological Weapons Conventions, and manages Sunshine Project's research on biodefense, incapacitants, and other issues. Welcome, Ed. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on.
Sure. Well, thanks for being here. I was shocked to find out that there are plans for Livermore and Tracy that the community should really know about. And what's going on?
That's right. The University of California system with Lawrence Livermore Lab is proposing to construct what would be, depending on how you count, either the first or second largest individual laboratory to study biological weapons agents in the country.
That's kind of scary, because what would be tested there? What would be at these labs? And also aren't there plans to build a huge facility in Tracy? Is that what it is? Or?
Yeah, sure. What it is, it's a facility called NBAF, the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility. And what this would be an enormous biodefense lab that includes what's called biosafety level 4 containment. And that's the maximum containment, where people wear sort of spacesuits in the labs and work with diseases like Ebola or Marburg virus that have no cure. This particular facility would be over 500,000 square feet. That's about the size of 5 Walmarts, and would basically work with just about all of the most dangerous viruses on Earth, plus your more, let's say, run-of-the-mill types of things like anthrax and plague, which are actually less dangerous than some of the viruses. And this would be situated on about between 30 and 100 acres at Lawrence Livermore's Site 300, which is to the east of Livermore, near the town of Tracy.
Wow. But fortunately, the workers know not to leave any windows open, so none of these biohazards escape into the environment.
Well, this is an ongoing debate that between folks like myself and the government. There are, and there have been, a string of laboratory accidents in recent years. Probably the best-known ones were the 3 accidents in separate locations that took place with SARS virus just a few years ago. One of the big problems that my organization has with the expansion of the biodefense program is that there are inadequate federal regulations of these labs. And one area in particular is a lack of requirement for reporting of accidents.
Okay. Well, what I find troubling is a lab like this, of course, will mean more experimentation on animals, and I guess in this case most likely cows, pigs, sheep, animals that are eaten, using lethal agents on them, similar to those likely to use by terrorists. So the animals suffer, and then do you feel the community is at risk then?
Well, I think that this facility, the federal government hasn't made a case that this facility is actually needed. So I don't think that it should be built anywhere, because I don't see a compelling need for the research. My organization is an arms control organization, mainly, not an animal rights organization, but I have to say that if there's no compelling reason to conduct the research, it seems rather inhumane to do this to the animals that would be there. But it would include sort of your standard domesticated animals, but also presumably primates and rodents.
And there'll be tests for anthrax and viruses for which there are no cure going into the animals.
Certainly, that's right. Anything that walks into the level 3 or the level 4 areas of this lab will not walk out. that's a certainty, with the exception of the people. But all of the animals will be that are involved in research involving live agents will be sacrificed.
Yeah, well, there's no compelling reason, except I saw it written that the UC Regents are pushing for it for financial reasons, and that's usually the compelling reason for what's not necessary.
Yeah, that's right, and it's a problem here, and it's a problem across the country, that there's been a tenfold increase in the amount of money that we spend to study biological weapons agents since 2001, and there is just so much cash out there that you see facilities being built without a real reason and without the necessary justification to do it. This one is a $500 million grant, probably right up front, so $500 million can be attractive to a large institution that lives off of federal grants.
And the Regents and the UC system do make a lot of money off of animal exploitation also. We have about maybe a minute left. What can people do if they're just finding out about this now? What do you suggest?
I suggest a couple of things. First of all, the bid that the University of California has made for this facility, they're keeping a secret. I've actually received 7 of them from the University of California's competitors, but University of California is one of them that won't even let the public know what exactly it intends to build. The other thing is that the Department of Homeland Security says that they're going to pay attention to what the public says about the lab. So the public needs to contact the Department of Homeland Security and let them know. So you can sign petitions. Tri-Valley Cares, a local organization in Livermore, is circulating a petition. And also, particularly in Tracy, but also in surrounding areas, let your city councilmen and your representatives know that you don't want this lab. And the Department of Homeland Security says that they're going to pay attention to that.
Yeah, I understand. Somebody said that, you know, Pombo is from Tracy and doesn't support the lab himself. Perhaps his real estate values would go down as a result of a lab such as that. So both he and the Democratic contender seem to be in opposition, from what I hear.
I am not privy to the details of their position. My focus is mainly national. It's my understanding that neither has endorsed the lab.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you have a website that people can visit?
I do. The name of the website is www.sunshine-project.org. And for information about this lab, you can look for the acronym NBAF.
NBA, S as in Sam, or
F as in Frank.
F as in Frank.
National Bio Agro Defense Facility.
I see. And you also mentioned Tri-Valley Cares, and that's the website is trivalleycares.org, T-R-I-V-A-L-L-E-Y cares.org. Ed Hammond, thanks for bringing this issue to our attention today on Go Vegan with Bob Linden, and hopefully you'll update us as things progress.
Thank you very much. I hope people speak out about it.
Okay, thanks so much. Okay, there you have it. Ed Hammond with the Sunshine Project. Again, sunshine-project.org and trivalleycares.org. Coming up into our first break, Larry. Leo is off today, so Larry's behind the controls and doing quite well so far. And Dr. Capaldo coming up next. And John Robbins in just a little bit on Go Vegan with Bob Linden. Thanks for listening. I'm always talking about how delicious Veggianaise is. No vegan kitchen should be without it. It dresses up even the simplest foods, like my favorite sandwich, avocado, tomato, and Veggianaise. Or is it mashed up chickpeas, celery, onions, and Veggianaise? Or a tofu burger with Veggianaise? Well, I do know I love it on baked or steamed yams. Well, you think you'd read about Veggianaise in a cookbook, it winning the American Tasting Institute Award? So I was surprised to see Veggianaise in a book about stroke prevention. Yet, there it is, page 194, in Stroke Free for Life by David Webers, MD, Chair, Cerebrovascular Diseases, and Director, Stroke Research Center, Mayo Clinic. And who would know better about a Mayo alternative? Try Veggianaise, now in organic. Available at Follow Your Heart, Canoga Park, California, and natural food stores everywhere. No, did you know? Yes, Follow Your Heart is totally solar powered. So Veganaise is made from power from the sun, as are vegan gourmet cheese alternatives, which melt so you can enjoy pizza, enchiladas, and nachos, all vegan. And don't give your family the bird, give your family chicken-free chicken. And the vegan salad dressings from Follow Your Heart, quite delicious, quite organic, creamy miso ginger, balsamic vinaigrette, and Italian vinaigrette.
My tummy isn't a graveyard.
That is for sure. So don't feed me meat if my tummy is in a graveyard. Have you ever felt you really wanted to get away from it all? Really away from it all? How about to your own tropical island? Well, there's one available for weekly rental at affordable rates. Make your getaway to Anidrike Island, an island in the Marshall Islands. It's a naturalist dream come true. Rugged, raw, pristine, wild, 9.5 acres with a gorgeous 1,000-foot-long intimate coconut palm shaded fine white sand beachfront that curves around into a crystal clear blue lagoon, turquoise lagoon with a year-round temperature of 82 degrees, perfect for snorkeling above countless varieties of tropical fish swimming in their own natural environment. Yes, you can float these calm waters and enjoy spectacular sunsets or surf on the other side of Anidrike. The entire island and 200 foot surrounding it are a marine and nature sanctuary and preserve, and there's even a mini rainforest. Call Rick at 808-735-1727, 808-735-1727 for information and to reserve your private island paradise, 808-735-1727, or email rickmcover@yahoo.com. That's RICMKOVER@yahoo.com. Basic cabins available if you want to leave civilization behind, if you want peace and tranquility and solitude. Here's your own private island. Weekly rates May 1st through October 31st, $395. Surfing season November 1st through April 30th, $695 per week. And $200 reserves any given week you want, if available. Again, contact Rick, 808-735-1727, or email rickmcover@yahoo.com, RICMKOVER@yahoo.com.
Meat cuts life short. I don't want my life cut short or the animals.
That is for sure. Just want to remind you that we have a wonderful company sponsoring us, Nutru. Check back at the archives at goveganradio.com for the interview with Jim Donovan of Nutru, giving us Omega Zen 3 DHA supplement. And Nutru develops products in line with your values, ethical treatment of animals, utilization of sustainable plant sources, energy conservation, recycling, less dependence on petroleum, and saving the fish. Yes, if you're Omega 3 is a little fishy, too bad, because you're actually depleting the oceans of marine life, and fish and fish oils often contain mercury and heavy metals and PCBs and other toxins that accumulate in marine environments. So now you can benefit from the original vegan omega-3 DHA supplement, Omega Zen 3 from Nutru, available at all Southern California Whole Foods locations. Definitely check it out. We've been talking about it in terms of brain function, cardiovascular. It's what you want to take, and the fishy ones are what you want to avoid, okay? Omega Zen 3 from Nutru, now available at all Southern California Whole Foods markets, or go to the website nutru.com.
Burgers and hot dogs today, then heart attack and cancer tomorrow.
Okay, well, coming up momentarily, we will have one of the illustrious speakers who will be at the Strength of Many, the 21st Annual International Compassionate Living Festival. That's on the West Coast for the first time, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, October 6th through the 8th at the Renaissance Montura Hotel, 9620 Airport Boulevard in Los Angeles, presented by the Culture and Animals Foundation and Animals and Society Institute. Tom Reagan, who will be on next week, Kim Stallwood, who's been a guest in the past, and just an illustrious list of speakers, Jeffrey Mason and Dan Peraro, and just Karen Davis, United Poultry Concerns, Christine Chavez. Bart Grzalski will be speaking. He's an author and peace activist writing on Gandhi. And this is an event that you simply must attend. Register through September 29th at $139 per person. And there's a phone number to call, 410-675-4566. 410-675-4566. The website is animalsandsociety.org, all spelled out, animalsandsociety.org/conference06. You have to be here, and you'll know why in a moment when we talk to Theodora Capaldi of the New England Anti-Vivisection Society, coming right up on Go Vegan with Bob Linden. Very good. Well, some of the pretty music that we're hearing today is Song of the Sirens music from Renee Smith, which is really lovely music for kids and for the family. There's garden music, seeds and songs to make them grow. What we're hearing now is from Ponytails, very animal-friendly music. We also have Song of the Sirens presenting Ocean Songs, Angel of the Sea and Ocean Songs, Song of the Sirens music. Beautiful music to quiet the mind, soothe the soul, and awaken the child within. Oh, what the critics are saying? Well, Nicole says, I love my mommy's music. You will too. She says the music is great for dancing. Jimmy, her son, says thumbs up. And Buster the dog says the music is very relaxing. And you can order yours, too. It's actually available now from Amazon.com and available at Tower Records. Or you can send $15 per CD to Song of the Sirens Music. And that would be P.O. Box 39849, Downey, California, 90239. That's Song of the Sirens Music, P.O. Box 39849, Downey, California, 90239. The phone number, 562-861-3075. And thanks for the sponsorship from Song of the Sirens, songofthesirens.com. Okay, we continue on Go Vegan with Bob Linden. And as I was saying, this wonderful conference is coming up. You must attend. It's the Strength of Many, the 21st Annual International Compassionate Living Festival. That's happening in Los Angeles, October 6th through the 8th. One of the featured speakers there is Dr. Theodora Capaldi. She's the president and executive director of the New England Anti-Vivisection Society. Welcome, Dr. Capaldi. How are you today?
I'm fine. Good afternoon or morning, I guess, out there, or afternoon early.
Well, it depends, because the show runs in different cities at different times. So so greetings to all at whatever time of day.
That's right.
But unfortunately, 24 hours a day, the animals are suffering in labs. And you are with the New England Anti-Vivisection Society, which happens to be one of the oldest animal protection organizations in the country.
Indeed. We were set up in 1895, just not very long after Harvard University set up the first bona fide animal research lab in the country. So we're Boston-based, but we are a national and international organization. And just out of interest to your listeners, Bob, when we started, we were also protecting humans from unethical, intrusive, and painful research, because they, too, were fodder for the new vivisectors at the turn of the century. So we've been around a while and have had a lot of accomplishments under our belt, but there's still too much to be done.
Yeah, that's for sure. So you were founded shortly after Harvard started an animal lab in Cambridge?
Yeah, there had been animal research going on throughout the world prior to that, but in the United States, the first sort of dedicated animal research lab was in Boston, Cambridge, actually. Mm.
Where does your interest in vivisection and animal experimentation
originate? Well, I tell you, I'm a psychologist, and so I grew up learning about science and the scientific method, and I remember learning about Harry Harlow and the horrific experiments he did with primates to learn about quote-unquote love. So my own education and experiences go back a long time, but curiously, I think I became an anti-vivisectionist in the sixth grade when my sixth grade teacher, Miss Gertrude Edwards, was a member of NEAVS, the New England Anti-Vivisection Society, and would bring in reading material. It's part of why we're so dedicated to educational work, because young children have an openness to the truth, if you will. They have not yet been indoctrinated into a certain kind of belief system that doesn't allow them to question authority, even when that's science. So I go back to the sixth grade, and we're dedicated to helping students learn more about the realities of animal research and its limitations and abuses.
Mm. And how do you do that in the schools? What?
Well, we were part of the first successful campaign to end terminal labs at the first veterinary college in America. That would be Tufts University, where students really had to harm animals in order to learn how to help them. And we went in and offered the students an alternative program where they actually got to help cats without homes, unwanted and abandoned cats, by performing needed surgeries, spay neutering and bone fractures under supervision, and learned surgical skills, and nobody had to die or be injured for it. So those are the kinds of programs that we want to see happen. We want to see good science. We want to get rid of bad science, inhumane science, callous science, and science that's limited. A lot of the research now on the use of the animal model is proving it simply is neither the only and nor the best way to learn about human health and disease. So we realize it starts in the classroom, and it will end when one of our campaigns right now, Bob, is to get the chimpanzees out of labs, which would be the first non-human species to be afforded that protection. And we're gonna get behind this campaign because the time is right. Other nations have done it, and it's time for America to climb the ethical ladder of science and get that other species suffer and deserve the kind of consideration that we now only seem to want to give to our own Homo sapiens.
Mm. And I think lately it seems people are particularly horrified by experiments on chimps, but also dogs and cats. And
yes.
But I guess we still don't have sympathy for mice and rats yet.
Well, I'm not sure that's entirely the case now. I think, we work very, very hard to get rats and mice protection in laboratories because they're not even protected. You can do you don't have to give anesthetics. People who have worked in laboratories where they use rats and mice to teach intubation, you end up with a suffering mass of writhing lives who are just sort of tossed aside, bleeding at the mouth. It's something you're supposed to be able to do quickly. The animals are severely injured, severely suffering, it's considered a throwaway commodity. Now, the only reason we're not right now working to focus on ending rat and mice research is because we're talking 100 million animals a year as a rough estimate, and we're also talking that it is harder to get human sympathy we have negative connotations towards some species.
Sure.
Cats and dogs and chimpanzees right now have tremendous support from the public, and we're going to use that strategically. In all honesty, there's no difference in my mind between a chimpanzee who's suffering in a lab or a small little pot-bellied pig that was bred specifically to be used. But we have to go strategically with what our time in culture and science civilization is ready to do, and we think it's to get out. There's only, I always say, the good news is there's only 1,300 chimpanzees left, and then I follow that up by saying, and the bad news is there's still 1,300 chimpanzees left. But it's a doable population. It's a population that the public has sympathy for, and it's a logical population for us to be focused on because science itself has afforded them a different moral status. A chimpanzee is the only species that you can't kill simply for the convenience of a laboratory. That's why we have a whole retirement program, which is flawed, but nevertheless it does recognize that they are ambassadors, so to speak, between our species and other species. So we're focusing on them because we think if we can't get them out, then the rats, the mice, the birds, the pigs, the guinea pigs, they're not going to have, it's going to be a cold day in hell if we can't get one non-human species out. And we're putting our time and resources behind the chimpanzee because it's doable. It's totally doable, and it'll start an exodus.
I know we have many primate experiments going on in California with the University of California. Most of the campuses, or campi, if I wanted to be grammatically correct, seem to bring in about $200 million a year.
Yeah.
So that seems to blind them to, you know, I just wrote to the chancellor at UCLA because he announced that there are 950 current experiments going on, and that the animals are afforded great protections, state and federal oversight, and that our opposition to vivisection gets in the way of medical progress. So I kind of wanted to ask questions about all of that of him, but he refused an interview and wouldn't allow me to visit.
We find that, too, because basically what we're getting is the rhetoric. In fact, many years ago, I think it was around 1990, 1989, something like that, the American Medical Association issued a report on how to combat animal protectionists. And one of the things that they say is we must show animal protectionists to be anti-science and anti-human. Now, as I started my interview with you, I'm a scientist. I'm a social scientist, and I've worked for decades helping human beings. And I'm probably the more typical animal protectionist rather than somebody who doesn't care. We do tend to care about all sorts of things, the environment, the elderly, children. They don't want to debate us because all they have is their rhetoric and fear tactics. When you come down to the ethical arguments, and now, thank God, finally, we also can argue the science and how poor the science is, they know they're not going to win the debate in public. And they also know that all studies show that the American public only reluctantly endorses the use of animals. When given an option for alternatives, they far prefer that. Now, that doesn't mean that the majority of Americans are against animal research. It's that they reluctantly endorse it because they have been given a line of rhetoric that says, without it, we will all perish. But let me give you one example, because there are myriad examples, but I'll give you one that really resonates. Let's go back to the chimpanzee, who has been shown to be 96-97%. We share our genetic code with them, 96-97% the same genetic code. Now, you're not going to get a species more similar to human beings. That still leaves a 3-4% difference. Well, when HIV was first discovered, they found that chimpanzees could be infected with it, but it didn't do anything. It was basically, I'll say, a benign virus. And as a result of that faulty information from a species who theoretically is more like us than any of the species in the world, they allowed a contaminated blood to be introduced into the French blood supply, accounting for thousands of HIV infections and deaths. That's a stunning example of the kind of errors,
right,
the erroneous information that can be drawn from animal research. You don't know until after the fact.
Right. You can't extrapolate from a mouse to a human necessarily,
right,
or a human twin to another human as
that's
to a reaction.
Right. Or a man to a woman.
Man to a woman.
Yep.
I'm sure there were lots of animal tests of Vioxx and Celebrex and Bextra and Bacol and all of that. Huh? So, you know, but they're all pulled off the market and deadly to the public. So.
That's right. Because essentially, using an animal model to quote-unquote test drugs is really to give drug companies a legal protection. Everyone knows that the results may or may not be applicable to humans. And that's not science, that's guesswork.
Well, we're just about out of time here now, and New England Anti-Vivisection Society, the website is neavs.org, and you will be speaking at the Strength of Many Conference, the 21st Annual International Compassionate Living Festival coming to Los Angeles.
I'm looking forward. Can I just say two quick things?
Sure.
Our chimp website is www.releasechimps.org. And for your listeners, I want to promise, I promise that I would mention that there are still scholarships available for the entire conference for only $69 for students. Again, reinforcing everyone's idea that students need this. They need access to this so they can go into science, they can learn science, and they can question the authority of science that now is failing animals and humans. So $69, I'm told, is a great deal for this wonderful conference with speakers from all over the country. I just had to put that plug in, I promise, Jill.
Oh, well, it's a worthy plug, yeah. So
it's a very and helpful, hopefully, to a lot of your listeners.
Sure. Well, students can go to the website, animalsandsociety.org/conference06, animalsandsociety.org/conference06, and also the phone number is 410-675-4566. 410-675-4566. And Dr. Capaldo will be speaking there. Jeffrey Mason, Dan Peraro, just a wonderful list of speakers. Don't miss Tom Reagan, who will be a guest on next week's show. And Erica Meyer was a guest last week, Compassion Over Killing. It's not a conference to be missed, and this is the first time on the West Coast. So it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, October 6th through the 8th, Renaissance Montura Hotel, 9620 Airport Boulevard in L.A. So make your plans, be there, and student scholarships, you got to be there. So
you got to be there.
Yeah, definitely. So I really appreciate your being on the show today and what you're doing for the animals. It's wonderful that you're getting the word out about all this, the fraudulent science, and making it real.
Great, and thank you, Bob, for all you do.
Thanks so much. Okay, that was Dr. Theodora Capaldo. She is the president and executive director of the New England Anti-Vivisection Society. And we have John Robbins, who is on the line also today. This is a parade of heroes that we have on this show, I'll tell you. That's like nowhere else. If you think that this show is worth being on the air, well, help me pay for it, because, you know, the radio station business manager is giving me a look from outside the door like, give us money, more money, more money, because free speech is expensive. And you can make a donation online at goveganradio.com, or you can mail a check payable to Go Vegan Radio, which is a project of 501c3 International Humanities Center, P.O. Box 40246, San Diego, California, 92164. I need your help in paying for this so that we can have wonderful guests. You know, if we weren't on right now, there'd be a McDevil's commercial, or Murder King, or Wendy's, or Kills Jr., or Kentucky Fried Chicken. However, instead, we have John Robbins, who actually the only son of the founder of the Baskin-Robbins ice cream empire. John Robbins was expected to be made of the ingredients to follow in his father's footsteps, but John was a bit cold to that idea, and he would instead provide us with a scoop on diet and health and environment and the pursuit of a society at peace with its conscience, because it respects and lives in harmony with all life forms. And Diet for a New America is the book by which we know John most, and made a lot of people vegan. Diet for a New America: How Your Food Choices Affect Your Health, Happiness, and the Future of Life on Earth. That was also made into a one-hour PBS documentary. And that was followed with The Food Revolution: How Your Diet Can Help Save Your Life and Our World. That really picked up where Diet for a New America left off. Other books from John Robbins: The Awakened Heart, Meditations on Finding Harmony in a Changing World; Reclaiming Our Health, Exploding the Medical Myth and Embracing the Source of True Healing. And, oh, perhaps you've seen John Robbins on Oprah or Donahue or Geraldo. He received a standing ovation when he spoke at the United Nations. He's the recipient of the Rachel Carson Award, the Albert Schweitzer Humanitarian Award, and the Peace Abbey's Courage of Conscience Award. And he's the founder of Earth Save International. He has a new book out now called Healthy at 100. Healthy at 100, the scientifically proven secrets of the world's healthiest, longest-lived peoples. Longest-lived?
by John Robbins. Longest lived, longest lived?
Longest lived.
Longest lived. Okay, that would make sense. How are you, John?
I'm doing great. How are you, Bob?
Great, great, great. Great to have you with us here today. And, well, I think we're always excited when there's a new book from John Robbins. What's this one about?
Well, it's about healthy aging. And it's, you know, I've seen people, I'm sure you have too, I'm sure our listeners have, who age with bitterness and deterioration and decline and pain. And on the other hand, there are some people who age with beauty and deepening of their spirits and health in their body and mind and vitality and celebration and joy.
I want to be the second one.
Well, I do too. I want to be healthy at 100, and a lot of us do. You know, people are living longer these days for a variety of reasons, but they are not living healthier. In other words, we've extended the human lifespan, but we have not extended the human health span. And as a result, it's a sad result because many of our elders are not in their wisdom years. They're in years of pain and suffering. Cognitively, there's impairment, there's dementia, there's Alzheimer's. Physically, there's chronic disease that limits what they can do and, most importantly, limits their joy and love of life. And what I have found, and the reason I wrote Healthy at 100, is that we have a great deal of choice and a great deal of control over which of those two outcomes becomes our own.
Well, you traveled, or you actually studied a number of different cultures in organizing this book. Whom did you study?
Well, there are four societies or cultures worldwide that are renowned and have been studied by scientists for their healthy aging, for their healthy elders. They have a lot of longevity. People tend to live a long time in these places, but most remarkably, they are healthy. They don't get, in the United States, for example, half of those of us over 85 years old have dementia. Half. Hmm. In these countries, dementia is almost unheard of. It just doesn't happen.
What would cause that, then?
Well, I'll get to that. The four cultures, though, three of them were studied by the National Geographic in the 70s, and one is Hunza, one is Vilcabamba, and one is Abkhazia in the Caucasus Mountains near Russia. And the fourth one is Okinawa, where the Okinawa Centenarian Study has been going on for three decades, and it has given us an extraordinary amount of documentation about what, in fact, are the secrets of these peoples that enable them to have such fabulous health in their elder years and live such long and healthy and happy lives. What I've thought is it's very hard when you study one of these cultures to disentangle what is it in fact, what is the secret, what is what are the key factors. But when you have four and they're at different altitudes and different latitudes and different bioregions and have different ethnic backgrounds and so forth, if you can find things in common between them, then you have a real clue as to what the underlying factors are, and then you can ask and work on how to translate that into our lifestyles here so that we can have the healthiest and happiest possible aging experiences.
Well, give us a few examples.
Well, one of them is food, the food we eat. It turns out that these peoples all eat plant-based diets.
Really?
They derive their protein almost entirely from plant sources, from beans, for example, and other legumes. They eat a lot of fresh foods. They don't eat any processed foods. They don't eat anything resembling high fructose corn syrup or white flour or sugar or the processed oils that are in so many of our foods today. They eat a natural foods diet, a whole foods diet, and they don't overeat. Every calorie they eat is filled with nutrition because it's good food. It's wholesome, natural food. And therefore, they don't have to eat too much in order to get enough of the nutrients they need. So they are lean, strong, clear-minded people. And their example really points in a vegetarian direction for us, because when you look at the world's healthiest cultures and society, you see that any level of meat or animal product consumption that they do consume is rare, it's on special feast days, it doesn't make up a significant part of their diet at all. And the contrast with this country, where we eat so much meat and so many dairy products to our great detriment, is a dramatic contrast, and I think it really does show us, highlights for us, in fact, and encourages us, in fact, in a vegetarian direction.
Wow, and you think that dementia is part of the diet?
Well, it's related because when you the diets that they're eating and what I'm proposing we eat are these kinds of diets are full of antioxidants and phytochemicals, these nutrients that protect the brain against cognitive decline, and they really do work. And there's no reason really for people to get Alzheimer's. It's so common in this culture that we actually almost think of it as an inevitable part of aging. But you can be healthy at 100, and if you eat differently than the cultural norm, you don't have to suffer these kinds of declines. If you challenge the cultural norms and do what's truly healthy for you and the planet and the animals, which happens to be the same thing, mm-hmm. You also need to exercise a lot and regularly. They do. They all do. They don't belong to gyms, but their lifestyles are such that they get a tremendous amount of exercise just in the course of their daily lives.
The cultures was very dance-oriented, you said, also?
Some of them dance. Yeah. Oh, they all dance, actually, and they all sing. They're celebrants. they enjoy life. They're brimming over with vigor and vitality. They're fabulous people in that way. And, you know, sometimes people say to me, yeah, but if you don't eat ice cream, if you don't eat hot dogs, I mean, what about the pleasure in life? You may live longer, or maybe it just seems like you are living longer. And I think when people say that to me, I think of these people that I've been studying, these healthy elders, and how vital they are.
Right.
And I think of when I look at how filled with life and celebration and joy they are, and then I look at the people who ask me those questions, and generally speaking, they're overweight. They're harried and hurried. They're driving in traffic and stuck in rush hour. They're underslept and overworked and eating fast food. And I see, look at the two qualities of the two lives, and I say, who is the true celebrant here? Who is the person who is really experiencing sensual pleasure in their lives, you know, enjoying their lives to the full? I don't think it's the person who relies for their pleasure on the hot dog or the ice cream. I think, in fact, those are very, very, very impoverishing substitutes for the real joy of life.
And people should note that this is John Robbins not supporting ice cream.
Yes.
Now,
yes, I had my chance.
Your chance, yes.
Yeah, and I grew up with an ice cream cone-shaped swimming pool in my backyard, and my dad is the founder of Baskin-Robbins ice cream and flavors and all that. And I ate more ice cream in my childhood than anybody else, I assure you. So I do know what I'm talking about. But, my dad developed some serious health problems. My uncle, Bert Baskin, my dad's partner and brother-in-law, the other founder of Baskin-Robbins, died of a heart attack in his early 50s. Ben Cohen, the founder of Ben & Jerry's, the ice cream chain, had a quintuple bypass at the age of 49. Now, I'm not saying that a single ice cream cone is going to kill anybody, but the more you eat, the more likely you are to have the kinds of heart problems that killed Bert Baskin, my dad's partner, and the co-founder of Baskin-Robbins, that just about killed Ben Cohen in his 40s from heart disease, the founder of Ben and Jerry's, and that caused my father so much stress as well.
Mm.
Fortunately, my dad changed his diet in significant portion because of his response to my work, and he's had a lot of good years since then.
Mm.
And it's not too late for anybody. You know, you can change the way you live, the way you think. People say, can you really be healthy at 100? And I say, you have a lot better odds than you probably think. And you can certainly be healthy in your elder years more than you think if you take action and take the steps that I outline in Healthy at 100, my book.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've certainly given new meaning today to "we all scream for ice cream," kind of a little different definition when it comes from you. I note that you talk about, well, the comparison you make here, it almost seems like people are driven by a death urge, they're despondent, they're mean, and, you know, there's another choice of, you know, people
well,
who can be healthy
are,
and whole.
I mean,
and
driven by, that's an extreme portrayal of it, but yes, there are people in our society who are so cynical, who are so broken and defeated and resigned that they've kind of shut down on life, and they no longer feel feel the welling up within them of the beauty of their spirit, of the joy of their experience, of their love for other people, of their pleasure in life. And that's really sad when that happens. That's really, really sad. And I wrote Healthy at 100 because I know it doesn't have to happen nearly as much as it does. It doesn't have to happen to you or me. It doesn't have to happen to people if we take the steps that are in our power to take.
Mm-hmm.
People can go, by the way, to my new website, which is www.healthyat100.org, healthyat100.org,
yes.
healthyat100.org, and learn more about the book if they want to there.
And learn more. I mean, you have other posted articles there. It's a wonderful website, and people who are interested in, you know, soy, for example, can go look at what you
have
researched
on soy. Yes, there's a lot of controversy
and...
today about soy. And I've written about it in some depth, actually, because I think it's a very important topic for people to understand. There are soy products that are really good for you, and there are some that aren't, and you need to know the difference. And so I discuss that at length.
Right, and people should go to that website. It's healthyat100, healthyat100.org. And, gosh, in your book you talk about the importance of relationships, anti-Atkins, anti-aging, things along those lines.
Yeah, well, relationships really are important. We're finding this more and more, that if people feel lonely, if they feel that the relationships that they're in are toxic to them, if they feel disrespected and undermined and by those relationships or in those relationships, that impairs not just their emotional well-being, which we would know, but it also impairs their physical health, the functioning of their immune system, the functioning of their respiratory system, the functioning of their cardiovascular system. It really does cut into their years of life and the health of those years. And by the same token, if you have relationships in your life where you feel seen and recognized and welcomed and honored and enjoyed, then that is fabulous for your health and will help you live long and well. We're communal creatures. We're mammals, and we are part of social networks. And I'm talking about the relationships with not just with your spouse, if you have one, but with your children, if you have them, with your parents, with your neighbors, with your extended family, with your close friends, if those relationships are nurturing you, if those relationships are helping you to feel more alive and good about yourself and able to give you opportunities to contribute and share your love in meaningful ways, that's really going to be great for your health.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, if you don't have those kinds of relationships, if you're kind of chronically lonely and isolated, then that's going to undermine your health. And so I talk in Healthy at 100 in my new book a lot about how we can develop relationships with each other that feed our spirits and help us live our optimum health potentials.
Well, I better jump on the vegetarian computer dating services right now just to make friends.
Well, you know, do make friends and keep them, and make new friends, keep the old ones if you can, and cherish one another, because we are part of each other's destinies in profound ways, part of each other's hearts and part of each other's health in major ways. If you put somebody down or you're mean to them, you can actually harm their health. And on the other hand, if you're kind and generous in your spirit towards people, you can actually help them live more fully and longer.
We're talking to John Robbins. His new book is Healthy at 100. And John will be speaking at the San Francisco Vegetarian Society World Vegetarian Celebration, September 30th, October 1st, at Golden Gate Park.
Yes, I'm actually speaking October 1st there.
Yes, so you're there on the Sunday.
And I'm speaking at Veg Sources Expo on Saturday, September 23rd.
Excellent. Yes. Okay. So vegsource.com for information on the Healthy Lifestyle Expo there. And Publishers Weekly said of your book, readers seeking that elusive fountain of youth would be wise to listen up. Dr. Dean Ornish says that Healthy at 100 may be John Robbins' finest work to date, taking readers on an inspiring global journey. This book provides the information you need for a breakthrough in health and fulfillment. If you're interested in extending your health span as well as your lifespan, read this book, Healthy Healthy at 100 is a masterpiece, and the praise is coming in from critics, and if it's a book from John Robbins, I would say get it, read it.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks so much, John, for being with us today, and we'll see you at the Veg Source Expo and in San Francisco on October 1st, you said.
Okay.
That's Sunday. Okay.
You will.
And the website, again, is healthyat100.org.
Yes, healthyat100 with the numbers, healthyat100.
Right, and read the book so that you regenerate rather than degenerate.
Absolutely.
That's the theme, huh?
Okay.
Help us with it. Thanks, John Robbins.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, and wish to remind you that you too can run on solar power with Sunshine Burgers. Since 1983, now it's your turn to discover the delicious simplicity of organic vegan ingredients with protein-packed Sunshine Burgers. Protein from the sunflower, energy from the sun. Sunshine Burgers, simply delicious from simple ingredients like the original certified organic ground raw sunflower seeds, brown rice, carrots, herbs, and sea salt. Delicious. Or try the organic zesty Southwestern Sunshine Burger. Ground raw sunflower seeds, brown rice, carrots, black beans, bell pepper, cilantro, garlic, jalapeno, cumin seeds, onion, and sea salt. Magnifico. Look for Sunshine Burgers in the frozen food section of your natural foods market, where you'll also find the barbecue Sunshine Burger with natural smoke flavor. No soy, no wheat, gluten-free Sunshine Burgers, protein from the sunflower, also rich in fiber and potassium, iron, and vitamin E. The gourmet burger since 1983. Oven-baked, pre-cooked, heat and serve, and you are solar-powered too. So you can check out sunshineburger.com, but better yet, check out the frozen food section of your local supermarket, your local natural foods market. Hooray for Hollywood. It now has a truly wonderful vegan restaurant called Truly. Yes, conveniently located on Hollywood Boulevard, right there at the Hollywood Boulevard exit off the 101. That's Truly, 5907 Hollywood Boulevard at Bronson. And it says right on the menu, we want to make a positive and healthful contribution to society by using products that are animal-free. We're making a statement to ourselves and others that we are conscientious eaters acting toward the greater good of all beings. And the greater good really tastes good at Truly, from breakfast for pancakes and, you know, just lunch and dinner. You know, it's just wonderful there. The soups and the salads and the sandwiches and burgers and wonderful wraps that you can get at Truly. The chicken nuggets are really popular. The noodle dishes, the curries, the veggies and rice, the veggie meat entrees, all wonderful. Give a call to Truly. Truly caters, Truly delivers. It's 323-466-7958. So maybe... Oh, Larry, you want to hit ponytails there? We'll track 11. I believe we can play that music here from Song of the Sirens. And you can get this music from songofthesirens.com. I want to see if I can hit the events calendar here. Let me see what I can get to in the time remaining. Well, this Wednesday at noon, you can let the Japanese government know that you oppose the annual dolphin massacre. The demonstration is at 350 South Grand in L.A. That's Wednesday at noon. And again, I urge you to attend World Vegetarian Day celebrations at Golden Gate Park, 9th and Lincoln, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. The 30th and the 1st. Farm Sanctuary invites you to slip on a pair of comfortable non-leather shoes and join the LA Walk for Farm Animals Saturday, September 30th at Palisades Park. That's Wilshire at Ocean Avenue. Similar walks for the animals are taking place throughout the U.S. and Canada to raise awareness and funds for animal rescue and protection. You can visit walkfortheanimals.org or email la@walkfortheanimals.org. In San Francisco, it's Saturday, October 14th in front of the Ferry Building at the Embarcadero. Register at 10 a.m. that day, walk at 11. You can go to email sanfrancisco@walkfortheanimals, walkforanimals.org. And this is all to support Farm Sanctuary. And we are just about out of time. So, leafleting, vigil, UCSF. This coming Thursday, 513 Parnassus Avenue in San Francisco, to protest vivisection, 4:30 to 6 p.m. Thanks for listening. Go vegan. Send money. Donate online at goveganradio.com.